Gosh, it's starting.
Got you on the sneak attack.
There's a countdown. Oh my gosh. Hold on, wait, let me close the door. We don't need my dog wandering in. All right.
Oh, how's your pup doing?
Good, good. His arthritis is acting up, but...
Oh, no.
So I guess that's to be expected.
Has it been like rainy and kind of gloomy down near you too?
Not rainy or gloomy, but a little colder.
Yeah, a little colder. Like, not yeah. cloudy, no?
No, no. We've had lots of sun, which has been nice.
Oh, great. Yeah, yeah, it's been
this cool. is a nice setup. I've never seen this platform before. I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's great. I highly recommend it.
Do you have unlimited time?
Yeah, yeah, this one's unlimited.
This is better than Zoom.
Oh, it's so much better. And then it transcribes it for you as well. Yeah. Oh, it's been my like little, I don't know. A lot of people use it and yeah, it transcribes it for you. I copy and paste it into ChatGPT. I make the whole transcript of the podcast and then 30 minutes, I already can post it. Yeah, man. Oh, dude. Because you're in Maryland now. So have you know what are some of the differences from living on Long Island compared to?
So this is more along the lines of what I'm used to in Ohio, like Ohio suburbs. You know, Long Island, you still had like your small family run businesses and restaurants and more chains in Maryland.
Oh, so, I see.
Some good spots, some gems, but we live across the street from a mall. So a lot of the options there are Cheesecake Factory and Maggiano's Italiano and things like that. So, but I went into DC a few weeks ago, and DC, no disrespect to New York. I love New York. New York will always have a special place, but DC is kind of like a less crowded, cleaner New York.
Cleaner? Oh, we like that.
A lot cleaner. But good food, like good places, a good bar scene, stuff to do. So I think we're going to be driving into DC quite a bit.
And how far are you from DC?
Depends on the time of day. So if it's rush hour during the week, we're a 2-hour drive from DC. But if it's the weekend and traffic's not bad, we're 30 minutes from DC.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
So traffic is brutal. Traffic is brutal getting into DC, but I don't have to deal with that too much.
It seems like traffic's been so brutal everywhere these days. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, everyone's back to office. Everyone's back to work. So the road's full of people.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is filling, clogging up the roads. You know, you're not kidding about the cleanliness as far as like how dirty Manhattan is. Every time I live in that little alleyway, I mean, you've been over.
Yeah, yeah.
That little alley, it just smells like piss all day long.
Yeah. And August is like, you know, it's August when you're waiting down in the subways and there's just that smell, that hot garbage smell.
Yes, steamy.
That I won't miss. But
it's like bubbling. You
know, I love the city, and I still love the city, and I miss the city a lot. That was something that was really difficult about the move. So having like a pseudo city, like having DC, which has a lot of the things that I liked about New York nearby, has been helping the transition on that end.
Right. But and then so I mean, say you want to take a day trip or a weekend trip to Manhattan. How far away is Manhattan from where?
Well, yeah, we've been back to Manhattan at least one weekend a month since we've been here.
That's great, yeah. It's
only 3 to 3.5 hours. It's not bad at all.
Yeah, that's not bad. What about train?
Yeah. You can take the Acela from the airport, from BWI into Penn. We haven't done that because a lot of times we'll take the dog. We can't take the dog. The dog's too big to take on the train.
That's tough, yeah.
The train's supposed to be really great. The other thing, too, is the train restricts when you come and go. So when you leave and when you get back, you're kind of at the whim of the train a little bit.
Right. When
you're driving, you have a little bit more independence. So we've been, you know, driving in and either staying at a pet-friendly hotel or with friends that can have pets in the city.
Yeah.
Most recently, we went for my sister's birthday, so that was nice.
Oh, nice. And yeah. What part of the city is she in?
She's not.
Oh.
So they planned a trip to visit when we were still planning to live in New York, and then we weren't in New York anymore.
That, you know, that makes sense, though, the versatility of like the timing to get into Manhattan, car yeah. versus train, and then with your pup. Yeah, that does make sense. I'm probably going to be taking car a lot. So the new position so far, I mean, yeah, he's yeah, good. Yeah. I want to hear a lot about it. Yeah.
No, I'm very, very, that's like the one huge, huge, huge plus of the move is that it's a really good place to be. It's really nice to feel very supported. Like the department chair he's stopped by my office a few times, which I have an office, which is absurd. An office with a window and a place to hang my diplomas. My residency diplomas have been in my parents' house because I haven't had a place to put them. And now they're on the wall where they belong.
That's right.
The department chair has stopped by like 2 or 3 times. It's like, I just want to let you know, we are so glad that you're here. And like, feels good. That feels good.
That's a great feeling.
Yeah. And to have support staff, you know, there's three full-time support staff for the department, and four, which is so helpful. So helpful. I can focus on actually growing the practice and doing the clinical side rather than being a secretary.
You know, it's fun. Yeah, I totally
hard to do both. They're both important, but if you have to do both, everything, then nothing gets done.
Then nothing moves forward. You know, yeah. So I wanted to take a step back though, and we've talked about this before, but you know, I just want to kind of wrap it up. And I know that a lot of people have asked me about oral pathology actually. So
yeah.
I think this would be a great point for it is, can you go through some of the different positions you may have as an oral pathologist, you know, academic setting, practice setting, affiliated with the hospital setting, because getting the surgery and you know, the specimens, but then also the laboratory side of it, how did that work? Like, what kind of career can you look at? And then I want to get into where you just came from and how it's different where you are now, Maryland versus allergy stuff, you know?
So the vast majority of the profession is in dental schools. Because there are so few oral pathologists and because the knowledge is so important, everyone teaches, even if you're not in a dental school, at some capacity you are doing education. And education can be instructing residents, can be doing continuing education in the community, doing social media. A lot, pretty much it's guaranteed that you're going to be doing education to some extent if you're an oral pathologist. But most are in a dental school doing formal education. Beyond that, even in hospital settings and things in private practice, there's kind of four different facets of oral pathology outside of teaching. The first is clinical care, seeing patients. The second is biopsy pathology and having a biopsy service. The third would be the surgical pathology, which a few more and more oral pathologists are getting into. That is when you're doing a resection case, if a patient has cancer or a benign tumor and it's getting cut out, then you are examining the microscope slide. Biopsy pathology, the question that's being answered is, what is this? Whereas surgical pathology, you already know what it is. You just have to classify it. And then the fourth is research. And so most oral pathologists are doing some combination of those four. No one is doing all four of those things. They would explode.
That would be a lot. Yeah. You can't be everywhere at once.
Correct. Correct.
You can't be at the patient and the microscope at the same time. No, that's a fact. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I know a lot, well, I guess that would be teaching as far as like textbooks, really writing like chapter. I know a lot of people are writing chapters and textbooks and stuff. And then I guess, you know, the settings between LIJ and where you are now in Maryland, similar, but better for the career aspect, potentially, well, right?
It's interesting because I was recruited for a very specific purpose. They wanted to bring me in to add some diversity to the department in that I'm very clinical based, where a lot of my experience before was clinical. You know, my previous position, I was just part of the biopsy service. I was seeing a lot of patients and doing surgical pathology because we had some head and neck oral maxillofacial surgeons at the facility. In this new position, I was kind of recruited because a lot of the oral pathology and the department that I'm in is very research heavy. And we're talking like bench work. One of my partners here is doing a lot of AI and AI and microscopic and gene evaluations. Like, it's very, very impressive. So their clinical side was, you know, there was not as many. There is an oral medicine specialist here, but he's retiring. So they really needed someone to come in and help with patient care, but also to grow the biopsy service and hopefully incorporate some surgical pathology, because there is a group of head and neck oral maxillofacial surgeons here as well. And right now it's kind of at the exciting beginning stages of you know, introducing yourself, making connections, and trying to grow and forge your own way.
And this is like what you're excited about. This is the part of oral pathology that you love, that clinic setting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think
to an extent.
Yeah. I think balance is really important and support. And I think I don't want to speak too much about why I left. I created that very carefully crafted YouTube video as to why I left, just because I want to set the record straight that I respect, you know, my mentors are still there. I love and appreciate them. We just saw them at the annual meeting, but it was more of the work that was there and the amount of work and the amount of support where there wasn't a balance, where it was starting to affect mental health and sanity and things like that. Whereas now I'm feeling a lot more balance where I can kind of forge my own way, make my own path and set kind of my own expectations and things. So I went from 4 full days of patient care without a lot of support to 1 or 2 half days of patient care with a lot of support. Hopefully maybe I can do a little bit more, but
yeah, you got to bump that up.
That's the support. The key is the support.
You're doing 25% and 100%. I don't mean to, I'm not cutting you off. I think it's very nicely put the way you can say, like, and you have said it to me personally, is that, you know, at least at this point in your career, the support system and, you know, it definitely more positive, more beneficial elsewhere, you know, where you are right now. So, I mean, it sounds like a home run. I mean, and now you get to build on that clinical side in the program at Maryland there. Right. So it's like, it's going to be organic too. This is where you're coming from. Now you're dropping down to 25%, but you have the capacity to do more. It's great.
Yeah. And you know, I'm a little bit starting from scratch. You know, I left a referral network, people that knew me, but what's exciting about this area is there's not a lot of other oral pathologists in the area. You know, there is an oral pathologist at Johns Hopkins, but they only look at microscope slides. And then I believe there's a service out of Howard in DC, as well as some services in Philadelphia. But, you know, in Maryland, there's really only our group and another. So being able to kind of build and to grow, there's a lot of opportunity here that I foresee. And I've been given a lot of space to kind of get out there. It's really encouraged for me to try to make connections and meet people in the community and offer up our services.
That's great. So bring me through a you know, daily basis of the week, Monday through Friday. You said 2 half days, you're clinical. What about the other days?
Yeah. So different from where I am coming from before every oral pathologist that wasn't seeing patients would sit around the microscope. And now it's much more of a rotational thing. So we all have a week where we're responsible. That being said, whenever we have interesting cases or difficult cases, we run by one another. But when I'm not looking at microscope cases, I'm getting all my patient care work done, making sure my letters are done, but also focusing on growth. So a lot of what I've done is started to compile. I literally have maps of Maryland, Delaware, and DC on my wall. And I'm like planning out what days I'm going to go here, what days am I going to go there, what days am I going to go there to introduce myself and to hopefully have a referral base here. They've also really encouraged social media. And so some of that time I'll say, hey, I'm going to run home and record a few YouTube videos. And they're like, absolutely. Great. Perfect. Like part of my expectation is creating, you know, social media education. That's something that they actually want and expect from me and are giving me space to do. So some weeks are busier than others, but it's a lot of kind of creating my own space. Now I will be course directing the oral pathology, co-course directing with the current person that's running the courses, the pre-doctorate oral pathology courses, and that's going to create a lot more activity and work, but that'll start in the fall. So right now, everything is focused on growth and connections. And a big project here too is trying to build the bridge between us and the medical pathologists in the hospital and try to form a more formal relationship.
That's a good idea. Now, you didn't tell me that being co-course director was a part of the gig.
I didn't know that.
I'm catching on.
Dental school, I was going to be doing some teaching, but you know, the current course director is not an oral pathologist and is getting up there in age and trying to slow down. And I kind of came in at a good time to kind of take that over. So for the next few years, we're going to be doing it together, and then eventually I'll take over the reins to direct that course. It's kind of expected, but.
I see that, but that's a big role.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luckily, I mean, the truth is, the fact of the matter is that with AI, there's so many different things. I mean, you can make the course so much more engaging using AI with presentations, with stuff. I mean, we use Cahoots for just next week. Yeah. We got the trivia, right?
We got trivia night.
But also, this is something that I'm looking at is you could take one topic, right? And you know how a lot of these courses, they just give the same exam year after year. Now you could plug that exam into ChatGPT and ask them, like, keep the same topic, keep the same answer choices, but then switch the answer with the question to match it. And now you're keeping the same topic, same curriculum, almost the same exam, but instead of same questions, just the same exact topic and concepts. And then you could plug that in. Now you could start pumping out exams. It'll grade it for you probably, I'm sure.
Yeah. The one thing that I really want to resist, though. I'm not against AI. I think it's a really useful tool. I've seen, like I said, you know, my partner is developing AI for pathology and using it for different aspects of pathology. But I do think that it's important that we don't become over-reliant, especially on mucosal disease and the possibility of cancer. It's very interesting. I was in a dental group, still am in a dental group on Instagram with a general dentist, you know, influencer, and they were explaining how they used AI for path. And so what they did is they plugged in a description and put a picture and gave it to ChatGPT and said, give me a differential diagnosis. And ChatGPT said lichen planus. So the provider said, oh, this is lichen planus. And then I wrote up a note saying it was lichen planus. I saw the picture and I was like, that looks like it could be precancerous or cancer, and that needs a biopsy.
And who was it that did this? This was a dental student?
No, this is a professional in their own private, you know, dental influencing group that I joined to try to make connections. Hey, I'm here. If you want to collaborate? And I sent frantic messages like, hey, I think this needs a biopsy. I don't mean to be an alarmist. I usually am not. You know, in my clinical practice, I follow a lot of stuff. You know I teach like biopsy, but a lot of times I do follow it. And if it changes, I biopsy. But this was like, to my eyes, it needed biopsy. They never responded. But I think that's one of the dangers, at least right now with where we're at, is, you know, AI is a tool. And if you're not using the tool correctly, then it's not effective. And with something really important that you don't want to miss, like mucosal disease, we're probably a few years away from that being effective use. I started my career teaching at a dental school at Toro up in Westchester. And a lot of that teaching was flipped classroom case based. And I much prefer that. You know, that way, if people want to use ChatGPT, they can, but then you can have a real life discussion like, oh, you used this tool. This is where it led you. But this is where the pitfall was. This is what you need to know as a clinician. I think that that's what's really important. And a lot of my exams, I guess I just hate myself. They're open answer. So it's the describe this, what's your differential, and what's your next steps? Because to me, that's way more important than memorizing multiple choice.
It is. 100%. So, it is.
There's always going to be some degree of multiple choice, and AI, I'm sure, will be very helpful with that. But to some extent, you know, having those case-based questions is going to be, I think, most valuable. And students seem to like it because you can be a little bit more flexible and understanding with those as
also
well.
Also true. That's a great.
So I'm not opposed to AI, but I want to caution that AI is a tool. And at the end of the day, you're the human being, you're liable. Yes. So if you miss something or you misuse your tool, then it's not worth using.
It's adjunctive.
Not.
Yeah. It's not an end all be all. It's adjunctive. You need to know your craft. You need to know whatever you're doing. You know, it's not doing surgery but you can definitely use it. I think it's great because sometimes I'll plug things in the hospital. I'm not basing my note or my diagnosis or my surgery off of ChatGPT. No. It's like plug in this article and give me the key facts. I do this all the time. I give it a publication and I'll say, give me 5 questions based on the key facts and concepts of this article. And then it's like, it's quick, it's engaging learning. I think it's really good. In fact, later today, we took out an AOT today.
Interior Manual 17.
Yeah. It was, lo and behold, it was from several months ago. And I was like, we're here. Let's just take it all out. Let's scoop we see the cyst line. Let's scoop it out. No. We don't know what it is yet. You know, look, the tooth's in there. 27 is in the cyst. It's either going to be dentigerous cyst or AOT. Let's take it out now and be done with it. Came back AOT 6 months later. Now we take it out. I'm going to do a question later today. And the reason why it's related to ChatGPT or AI, I've been using ChatGPT to make the questions, but I'll look up the lesions. I'll find an actual photo of the lesion and then I'll just ask it, like formulate a question of it. And I'm not putting this in a patient's chart. It's like, we're all learning to, I don't know. You get it.
And the one AI tool that I actually prefer over ChatGPT is OpenEvidence. OpenEvidence is, I believe it's New England Journal of Medicine, but it's all specifically peer-reviewed article. So the data set that it has learned from is peer-reviewed articles. So if you plug in, what is an AOT? It'll give you peer-reviewed information with citations that can take you back to the original article.
I got to look this up. What is it? Open
Evidence. Open Evidence. I even did, I did a video on my YouTube channel, Will the Robots Replace Me?, where I talked a little bit about AI and pathology. And that was one of the things that I talked about, is I think that that's a really useful tool and a tool that I occasionally use when writing YouTube scripts. So I'll go, what are the most pertinent points about this condition? And it really helps me boil down what I want to say. And it's evidence-based. You can go to the article where it took the information from. It's
great. I love that. I had no idea. This is the first time I'm hearing about this.
Yeah, open evidence.
Do they have an app?
I don't know, but I'd be surprised if they have an app.
Let's see.
I think it's just a web page. I think it's just...
Yeah, it's got the orange logo. Yep. I'm trying to find it. Open evidence. Wait a minute. No way. No way. Is that it?
Nice. There is an app.
I know it's backwards from the screen, but you see that. Wow. I'm getting it.
Yeah, it's good for, you know, medical base. Again, as a tool, you know, at the end of the day, you got to fact check everything. And the nice thing about that is you can, you know, it tells you where it's getting that information. So if something seems suspect, then you can go back in. Are you familiar with the term hallucination in AI?
In AI? No.
Yeah. So there's this concept in our AI, it's called hallucination. And basically the algorithm, its purpose is to give you an answer, right? So if it doesn't know the answer or it doesn't have the information to give you the answer, it makes it up. And that's called hallucination.
I see.
So there are times actually in early AI algorithms where it doesn't have access to the information or can't process the information in a digestible way. So it will give you something as fact. And it's not correct. And that's the term that they use is hallucination. So it's nice that in this algorithm, the open evidence, they give you the citations to the paper. You can go back to the paper and you can fact check what you're given. I think that, again, with tools, it's always trust but verify. That's always been the motto with everything, is trust but verify
and think
critically, you know, and you want to kind of use this as a tool, but be very cautious and to double check things and keep up that trust but verify kind of out.
Exactly. You know, you're in it, just like say today, you know, you're in the surgery and oh, it looks like granulation tissue. What if it's not, you know? And by the way, say it's a patient who had squamous cell carcinoma of the anterior mandible, fibula free flap, the whole thing changed. Now 3 years later, taking out hardware, and that looks like probably just granulation tissue, but it's starting to look a little necrotic. Trust, but verify. Trust, yeah, that's probably right. It's granulation tissue, not going to alarm the patient. But let's verify. Let's send out a biopsy. That's the only way to do the right thing. That's just with life. You know what I mean? Now we're hitting AI. You got to do it with AI. Like we can't just get lazy because, you know, we're told. Yeah, no, I can't agree more. I can't agree more, man. Yeah. And
go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say really quickly. So I have my little apps here, right? Yeah. And at the bottom, you know how we have like that? I'm sure you have the same thing, right? But right in the middle here, I know it's hard to see. This is my little, I got the to-do list. And then these are my AI search engines. I got ChatGPT and Grok. I'm going to add.
What is Grok?
Grok is the XAI.
Okay, got it.
It can take like real-time stuff in the now. Whereas, I mean, I started using Grok about like 9 to 12 months ago, almost a year ago. Because ChatGPT lagged about 9 months. Mm. So Grok was the only one I could get like immediate information in like, you know, within 3 days or whatever it was, which I just thought was interesting. But always trust and verify. I'm going to add open evidence to my little AI module thing. I'm so pumped. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
That's what I'm so pumped because I didn't know this existed. And why is that important? Let me round this out, this whole thing. Because I had experiences with these hallucinations on the AI about a year and a half. And I think we talked about this, but I asked, sure, can you please give me 3 references for more further reading and research? Maybe even the exact source that you took this information from. So it goes, oh, yada, yada. It gives me a list of 3 things. And it was the first or second one. I go to the website and it's like all fake. I don't know if this was a simulation or something weird, but I felt like this was a fake website and ChatGPT made the website, which is, how would that possible? They bought you can't buy the domain. It was weird because it was fluff. Like there were typos in the captions at the bottom.
Well, it was probably part of the learning data set and it just wasn't a reliable source.
That's more likely.
ChatGPT had access to it as part of the learning data set. And because it's an algorithm, you have to teach the algorithm what evidence to weigh over others.
Yeah.
So it's going to look at that and give it the same kind of leverage as a legit website. So it all goes back to that trust and verify and what is you know, it, part of it is time saving, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to sit there and, you know, understanding algorithms is way beyond me, but to know how it was taught and how it was trained, that's going to give you a little bit more information. So it probably, the AI did not make the website would be my guess, but it probably was given that as part of its data set and gave it way too much credence.
That would be so weird. Right? That would be like a Black Mirror episode where all of a sudden ChatGPT is building websites in 0.5 seconds and calling it a reference.
We're in trouble.
It was weird.
So when they see this, I just want to reiterate that I appreciate AI. AI is great. So that way when the machines take over, they go over me. That'll be important.
So they don't slip something in your water at night or like the electricity.
Yeah. We're getting into Black Mirror, I think. But I will say, you know, one of my new partners that's here doing AI and he's directing, they have their own division of AI here. You know, what they're doing with algorithms and they're doing a lot of spatial gene mapping using AI and data sets. It's really incredible. And I think it's going to kind of revolutionize our understanding of cancer and pre-cancer and lead to actionable treatments. It's, you know, our way that we're accruing knowledge with technology is exponential. It's doubling. And it's getting to a point where in order to move forward with knowledge in society, we are going to need these tools. We just have to make sure that we're using them correctly. I mean, it's going to revolutionize everything we know about science and our world. The protein project where, you know, it would have taken 100 years to map every protein, but this algorithm was able to do it in, you know, 12 hours or something. I'm pulling those numbers out of thin air, but that is a real story. I forget the specifics.
Wait, let's look at a protein.
An AI algorithm for protein mapping. So if you Google AI protein mapping, it should tell you. It was a huge deal, a huge breakthrough.
Look at this. Yeah. Highly accurate protein structure predicted with AlphaFold. Is that the one or AlphaFold?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. DeepMind AI predicts 3D structure of nearly ever. Yeah. Every catalog protein.
This is crazy. I didn't hear about this. MIT News, yeah. AI system can generate novel proteins that meet structural design targets. Yeah, MIT research use AI to design new proteins and go beyond. Oh, but I guess that's creating them, not...
Right. No, there was a mapping. There was a mapping AI from, I think, like a year ago. It's been a while now where it was able to map every protein that we know.
Huh.
And it's straight at structure. It's pretty wild. So it's there's pros and cons with everything. You know, I'm sure people with the internet, this internet's going to, I mean, think of Y2K. Everyone was like, no, it's not going to be able to handle this. It's going to crash. It's going to cause the end of the world. And usually it's somewhere in between. Usually not the end of the world.
I'm never going to get a credit card. I'm always going to use cash.
That's right. That's right.
It's the same thing. That's how I was until I got a credit card at like 23 years old. It was bad. It was bad. But I held out as long as I could. And you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be with AI. Everyone's using Google search engine. Pretty soon, 90% or more, the majority of people using AI.
Well, now Google search engine, your first thing that you see is AI.
I did see that.
You know, every time you do a Google search, you're getting the Google AI giving you a synopsis of your search, which is, again, increasing efficiency and speed.
Right. Right. I'm wondering how AI is going to change the YouTube search because Google also owns YouTube.
Yeah.
How is that going to... That's going to be a curious one.
Not that I'm a massive creator anyway.
Got to get massive. You got to keep putting out content.
Yeah, I'm at 5,000 now.
I know, on YouTube, right? The subscribers?
Yeah.
I got to catch up to you, man.
Only took 3 years, but...
It takes time. Actually, by the way, Dr. Wahan sent me this YouTube video where it said that you grow faster if you turn this one button off. It's like in the settings somewhere. Oh. I got to find that video and send it to you. Because I did this like a month or two ago. I think it's helping you get more exposure in like a shorter period of time. And then long term, it kind of retracts a little bit. But I'll send it to you.
Well, I took heeded your advice, you know, a little late, but I'm on the shorts wagon now and TikTok and Instagram short reels and shorts and doing clips. And so that's helped. That helps too.
Shorts are your key because the search title, right? People Google or search or something. And that's so key for especially oral pathology, you know? Yeah.
The problem is there's so much nuance. But I like the idea of clips because my hope is that with a clip, they're going to go to the full video.
Yeah.
But there's so much information and nuance that you don't want to miss. And it's not like I'm making hour-long videos. But the thing is I worry, you know, you got to make a clip that has enough info in it to be relevant. But, you know, if a lot of the content requires more of the context. So we'll see. It's been good, but
constantly changing.
Love, hate. The theme of this talk is balance, apparently. Everything we're talking about is balance. Life balance, good and evil balance, balance with tool. Very zen. Yin and yang.
It's talk. Funny. I was just talking about balance in a different way as far as self-awareness goes. You know, you got to be able to be self-aware to say you need more of this or less of this in this moment or in your life or whatnot. So it's been a balanced day, if you will.
Good.
You know, but have you been to any good breweries lately?
I've been slacking on the breweries. Not really.
What about, you were just in Pittsburgh for the conference. Anything in
I know. But the thing about the conference, the AOMP annual meeting where, you know, every oral pathologist in the U.S. gets together, a lot of people, it used to be over the course of several days. So it would be Thursday through Wednesday. Or Saturday through Wednesday. And a lot of oral pathologists struggled with that because, you know, we have services, biopsy services that require, you know, biopsies that require diagnosis. And we don't, while it's not like, you know, we need to do surgery right away, but it's important that that's done in a timely manner. So the goal has been to make the meeting shorter, but we also need the continuing education in order to maintain our specialization with the board. So what that means is we have longer days. So before, you'd have like a morning session and an afternoon session, but a lot of time to go and explore where you were. But now, you know, it's long days of lectures. And granted, you don't necessarily attend all of them, but when you need the continuing education, you do. So I've been to Pittsburgh many times. I'm from that area. It's only about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from where I grew up. So I was familiar with Pittsburgh and did a lot of the touristy stuff growing up. I got my Primanti Brothers. That was the key. But
what's Primanti Brothers?
I did have a Yingling. Not my favorite beer, but obligatory when you're in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
So no breweries?
There's a few in Baltimore. I'll have to check out the brewery scene here. There's not, and even in New York, other than maybe other half, there's not, and Finback was pretty good too. There's not a lot of breweries. A lot of the well-known breweries are further up New England.
Yeah.
Boston and Vermont and Maine and things like that. I'm sure there are some good ones here. There's a really good one in Richmond, a few good ones in Richmond, the Vale and Answer. Richmond's probably, you know, an hour and a half away from here.
That's a long drive.
Yeah.
You're going to need to drink a couple just to get there.
No, don't drink and drive.
No, it's a joke. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely not. Oh, man. That was these little stupid remarks or quotes or what did my program director call it? Comments. You got to joke around these things. Yeah. You know, like a patient has no bone. Then you go like, oh, you can land an airplane on that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Gotta have fun with it, right?
Yeah. Ah. Life's short. But don't make it shorter by drinking and driving.
Right. What part of Maryland are you in, by the way?
So we are halfway between Baltimore and DC in an area called Columbia.
Okay, Columbia.
It's very confusing because there's Columbia in New York. And then when I was at the conference, for some reason, on my name tag, they didn't include my institution. They include the city on my address. So it said Columbia, MD. So it looked like I went to medical school at Columbia. I wasn't sure what was going on.
That's definitely a mistake. That's weird. That's odd.
Yeah.
But they did that.
So that's the joke. I'm a doctor from Columbia.
Any good cases come up recently that you're following?
So I've only been here about a month and a half. In my second rotation through in that week, I got my obligatory OKC, which we see a good amount. But I also got a myxoma, which is pretty uncommon. And a canalicular adenoma of the upper lip. So those are kind of not common, but not super rare things. So that was pretty exciting in my first week. I had a very interesting patient today that has seen just about everybody under the sun. I've been to lots of different big name professionals, and she's in rough shape. Her whole mouth is ulcerated. So trying to figure out a treatment for her, that's the first kind of difficult patient that I've come across, something that's going to require a little bit of work. The one thing that I'm really excited about is prior working in the hospital, you have to have laser privileges, which requires taking a laser course and having permission from the chairman. And it's a lot of hoops to jump through, and then you have to renew it. So while there was a laser in the department, I never learned how to use it. I never used it. And now in the school, there's a laser as well, an ERIAG laser that is used on leukoplakias and dysplasias. And the retiring oral medicine doctor uses it for ablation of pre-cancer, dysplasia, things like that. So I got to watch him use it today. It seems pretty straightforward. I'm really excited that that's something that I'll be able to incorporate into my practice that I think will be really nice.
That sounds really cool. How would you use that for cancer? To like
bleed? Not cancer. So cancer requires a cancer surgery, but like a leukoplakia, like a mild dysplasia or a moderate dysplasia, or even a keratosis that looks like it could become something in the future, like in a PVL, a proliferative vulgus leukoplakia situation, then ablation could be helpful. Now, if it's getting into severe dysplasia, carcinoma in situ, or cancer, that requires surgery. But in these lower grade stuff, it can be laser ablation. So what you do is you just burn all of the precancerous stuff and hope that it fills in with, you know, normal tissue. It kind of presses the reset button for that tissue by getting rid of the bad, quote unquote, bad stuff. Still requires monitoring, but it can be really effective. A good friend of mine that also is a really large social media presence, Ashley Briody, it's a big part of her practice, Central Ohio Oral Pathology. It's a big part of her practice.
I'm actually going to do a podcast with her. Yeah. Someone said you got to get on with it. Yeah.
Ashley's great.
So, you know,
Ashley and I will text each other. She has a lot of really novel things. She sees a ton of people. I don't know how she does it. Whereas I'm, you know, I've done a lot of surgical path. I don't know how she sees as many patients as she does, but she has a very thriving clinical practice.
You guys are busy. You guys, especially at your last role, you're overworked.
Yeah.
You are.
But again, it comes down to, do you have the support? You know, and it's one thing to be overworked if you're supported.
Yeah.
And Ashley's got a really good team. She's starting I think she's calling it apprenticeship with new graduates that can rotate with her for a year to learn how private practice oral pathology works, especially a clinical private practice oral pathology. So, you know, a lot of really, really exciting stuff. As long as you're well supported, you know, there's a lot of room for growth in the profession. It's just a matter of the buy-in and the support. That's what everything kind of hinges on. And if it's not there, then it makes it difficult to grow or to be sane.
Why are there so many difficult people out there? Why can't you just be supportive of other people?
Well, there's a few things. First being cost, you know, support is not free. And then the other thing too is, and I mean this in not in a mean way or a malignant way, but ignorance. You know, it is such a small profession that a lot of people that don't interact or have a firsthand knowledge of oral pathology, they just don't know, you know, they don't know what we do and what our day-to-day looks like because it is so small. Most people couldn't name an oral pathologist other than maybe the one that they know from their dental school. So that's tough too, is when you're small and people don't really know what you do and you don't advocate for yourself, then you don't get the support that you need. And sometimes even when you do advocate for yourself, you don't get this.
You know, and it's so crazy too, because one of the, I would say, top three most important specialties in maybe healthcare, because you can start to see changes in the oral cavity prior to other conditions arising, right? And then two, like, you could get a cavity, you might, you know, that tooth fails, you got to get it removed. Not going to die. Not usually, you're not going to die. But, you know, that lesion, God forbid it's cancer. You know?
The way that I kind of phrase it, I won't rank with other professions, but
so I'm saying,
the way that I phrase it to my dental students, and maybe this is a little uncouth, but there's only a few ways that a dentist can kill someone. The first is medication, giving the wrong type of anesthetic or an allergy or an adverse reaction. The second is infection, allowing a life-threatening infection to occur. And the third is missing a cancer. You know, I think that those three things are a priority in dentistry, knowing what you're putting in someone's body as a medication, making sure that a patient is not having an active life-threatening infection, and then not missing a cancer.
That's such a good point. That is such a good teaching point. That's huge.
Yeah.
What did you come up with that? Did someone teach you that? Or did you?
No, it's just when you think about it. So Toro, that I co-directed that course with, he's actually the academic dean and a good friend of mine, Dr. Yankowski. And he trained at the same place I did. He's been a really good mentor and friend. And he created this really awesome curriculum of both general pathology and oral pathology with this flipped classroom type thing. And so when you're teaching, you know, hypertension and blood pressure, and you're incorporating a little bit of pharmacology, and you're talking a little bit about chronic inflammation and acute inflammation and infection. So when you kind of are working through all of these things from an education standpoint, you realize what the important points are. You know, as a dental student, you know, you're thinking about, what do I want these dental students to know, and why is it important? And that's kind of where it hit me, like, well, here's kind of the major things that these students need to do at bare minimum leaving dental school so that they don't harm people. Remember, you know, the first thing is non-malfeasance, do no harm. That's really important in what we do. So in teaching this course and going through important subjects and doing cases with them, you know, it kind of made me think, like, well, what makes some a dentist dangerous? And those are the three things that at minimum everyone needs to be cognizant of.
Yeah, it's so true. It's funny that you mentioned that with the medications. It, unfortunately, I feel like the pharmacology experience in dental school could be a lot more robust, and it really should be.
Mine was brutal. Mine was robust. That's the only time I ever did an all-nighter in dental school was my pharmacology exam. But that was kind of old school. It was a professor from the College of Pharmacy. And I think either us or the class after us were his last class, and he retired. So it was very old school. Like, we had to know the generic and the name brand and the mechanism of action and the side effects and the intended action and of, like, I think it ended up being over 500 or 600 different medications. It was good. It was great. And I actually have the notes in my office because it is so important. But I agree that if it's not robust, then it becomes difficult and dangerous.
Yeah. You know, and because, I mean, there's only a handful of medications you're going to end up prescribing as a dentist. Not necessarily, no, because you could definitely go more. In oral medicine, oral pathology, what's another one where you might be prescribing?
Well, the thing is, it's not just prescribed, but it's also if they're prescribed by someone else, right? So, you know, if you see a name of a medication, it's important to ask yourself, oh, why is this person on this medication?
Like,
metformin, they're diabetic. I wonder what their A1C value is. How does that affect you? Well, if they're diabetic, that's going to affect a lot of things in their mouth, you know, their ability to fight infection, their periodontal condition, amongst others, you know, their liver health and how they clot. So there's a lot of things that knowing medications, even if you don't prescribe them.
I didn't realize that when I started oral surgery residency. You notice that more in a hospital setting, I feel like. Do you agree with that?
I yes and no. It's difficult because I'm coming from the perspective of I'm writing prescriptions for a wide variety of different things with a lot of different interactions. And I'm thinking about possible side effects that can lead to oral manifestations. So it's difficult for me to say just because I have had to consider it as an oral pathologist. I think maybe in the hospital setting, because the patients are sick and they're probably on more medications than like an outpatient situation. Right. That might explain a little bit. You know, these patients are pretty ill if they're inpatient in the hospital or they're going to a hospital. So that's maybe a consideration for why we think about it a little bit more in a hospital setting.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. That's the first thing. I mean, when you have a patient in, hey, what's your previous medical history? Any medications? And everyone's like, medical history? What? I'm sure you see this. Like, medical history? No, I'm clean as a whistle. No, I've never had a problem in my life. And then it's like, then you get to medications and it's like, metformin, Eliquis, aspirin. What are you taking? Eliquis? Oh, my doctor said I get the little heart thing. Like, you got AFib. Okay. I'll write that down. And then all of a sudden it opens up the can of worms. That is a good point. Oh man, I can't believe we're already over 50 minutes. We've been chatting this whole time. It didn't feel like, I love this, you know?
Yeah. Of course. And it's not as fun as in person with our beers and our.
Oh, I think that was my favorite podcast, chatting over some good beers.
Yeah.
You got to.
Next time I got to drive up. I'll just drive up and we'll do it again.
Yeah.
We'll have to fix the sound situation though.
Sound situation. Yeah. That thing broke. I'll tell you what though. I mean, I move out in 2 months now.
Oh yeah. Did you buy a place? Did I see that? You got a home?
No, I'm going to get my, I'm going to buy my dad's house out along.
Right.
But yeah, I'm going to move out there, and that's a good, oh, that'd be great. Yeah. You come on over.
I think good news. When we go up in May, I think we're going to stay on Long Island just to see some Long Island people. Memorial Day weekend.
Memorial Day weekend. All right. Yeah. Where on Long Island?
TBD. We'll see. Okay. We'll see where we end up.
I'm trying to go out to Greenport for Memorial Day weekend. I don't know if it's going to happen, but yeah, we'll touch base.
What location are you going to be practicing in?
I'll be in Melville.
Melville. Okay.
Yeah, I'll be in Melville. I'll be living in Smithtown. And hopefully now the pieces start to settle, lay down some roots and take the next chapter. That, you know how it goes. You know,
you got to be pretty excited.
I'm excited to get out of
light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, a little bit. I can't stay working in the hospital anymore. I don't know if it's just the residency experience. You open up a set in the OR and there are instruments missing every day. Every day there's something. It's a new surprise.
That's what keeps life exciting, though.
Yeah, keeps you on your toes. That's for sure.
That's right.
All right, Steve. I gotta get ready for tomorrow. How's everything going? How's the week going for you?
Good. Yeah.
Did you come back Sunday or Monday?
We came back on Monday. So the meeting ended Monday morning and then drove back. Pittsburgh's not too bad. It was 3.5-4 hours. We stopped at Falling Water in Pennsylvania, but
what's that?
Under construction. Falling Water, it's a Frank Lloyd Wright house. It's very famous. You would recognize it if you saw the picture. It's like a house built into a waterfall. And it's on the UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's a national historic registry. It's a really big deal architecturally. It's in the middle of nowhere, no signal at all. But we went and there was scaffolding up, and there's going to be scaffolding up through next year, which was kind of sad, but it was still cool. It was on the way home, so it was worth it.
That is cool. Oh, it's too bad that you couldn't. Are you able to go in it usually when it's not scaffolding and under construction?
You still can. We just got a grounds pass and walked around just because we didn't want to stay too long. But you can take a house tour and go in. And it was built in the 30s, but it's still really pretty impressive.
Into the rocks. I'm going to have to search this.
Falling Water. Falling Water is what it's called. Huh. Yeah, it's the same architect that did the Guggenheim.
Oh, Guggenheim's a cool one.
Yeah, but that also, we went for my sister's birthday. That's also, they were putting in a new exhibit, so we weren't able to do the whole thing.
Oh, come on.
I've had bad luck. The ghost of Frank Lloyd Wright is haunting me, I guess.
but balance. We're gonna end on balance.
We'll end with
balance. All right, man. No, this is good.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on tonight.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Is this part two or three?
For us? I think this is only the second time we've done this.
Only second? Because in person we did one.
So a lot of times they'll put the dose of dental, they'll put the trivia in.
Right.
But I think we just did the one in person and then we got this one.
Well, we
got
to do this more often. Thanks for coming on. Yeah.
And ideally,
is there a way for us to order beers so that we could, even if it's virtual, like remote, we can still try beers, pick out three or four?
Yeah, there's an app, TAVOUR app that delivers. It's like Uber Eats or Grubhub or Seamless that will just deliver.
We should do this. Wait, we should make this like a quarterly.
Yeah, all your other fancy rich guests, you talk about the watches that they have on. I don't own fancy watches, so we'll just have to do the beer of the week instead of the watch of the week.
Dude, I will do anything, man. I love watches. I love beer. We love beer, right?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, we could be having a beer. Quarterly, we have a podcast. We do, but then we try some beers and then we invite other guests. I'd be down for that too.
Perfect.
Hey, man. By the way, and I mean, this is just a $300 citizen. Nothing.
That's an expensive watch in my eyes. I'm just a poor oral pathologist. I don't make that oral surgery money. I got to do more laser ablations, I guess.
Are those good payouts?
That doing procedures is usually reimbursed higher, like biopsies and excisions and ablations and things.
Well,
like
we got to get you more than two half days in there then.
Right. It takes time. We got to grow it. We got to grow it. If you build it.
Every patient, you want some laser treatment?
No. I don't upsell. That's why I'd be an awful dentist, because I don't know how to upsell.
Well, I mean, if they don't need it,
if they don't need it, then I'm not going to.
I mean, if they need it, if they got a lesion, they're going to do something. Yeah. All right, man. We'll talk soon. We'll chat soon. Thanks for coming on.
I'll see you next week at least.
Yeah, next week. Oh, that's another thing. By the way, viewers, next week, trivia. Dr. Roth and I were going to be on there for the trivia. Oh man, this is like our, I think we're over 10 now, right? We're over 10.
I think so.
We do one trivia night a season, oral pathology trivia. It's a diagnosis. We throw something up. We have,
yeah, this is number 10. This is our 10th anniversary.
Dude, we got to talk. I'm so pumped. I'm proud of us.
We got to keep growing. Huge.
Wow. This is a big night. Balanced. All right, man. We'll chat soon. I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.